גיבוי. שוקה. תודה רבה.
And one who cherishes what we have. All right. We should get a second. You know, my wife, interestingly enough, every year she keeps reiterating the same kind of, you know, desire to me. She's like, can we maybe take a trip out to Europe? Maybe, you know, a few days in Prague or something. Let's go visit places. And I can tell her, I said, you know what, I'm not from this land. And there's so much of it. I come from Canada, I said, there's so much of it. You know, there's so much of it to visit and to see. I said, let's stay here. Let's go to new places that nor you or I, my wife is Israeli, yeah? So she's apparently been around, but apparently not, because all these places that I mentioned to her, asked her to, you know, tell me what places that she might want to go visit, she also doesn't quite know. So we see that this land, Baruch Hashem, has so much to offer, and I tell her, let's stay here. So after almost 8 years of marriage, we still haven't left the country together. And in all honesty, she knows that I have this spicy notion. I work very hard in my day when I build gardens, and so for me, all the money that I earn comes from the building of Eretz HaKodesh. And frankly speaking, I don't want to spend it anywhere else except for here. I took it from the ground, I want to return it to the ground. That's kind of how I feel. So that makes me a very proud Zionist, by the way. So I tell you, but I think that we see here that a true Zionist, we can see in from Parshas Va'eschanan, when Moshe Rabbeinu, he pleaded and davened to Kodesh Baruch Hu. We know many, many times the Medrash tells us that he should enter the land of Israel. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu would not let him enter. The Medrash tells us, why did he want to enter the land so badly? What was his true desire? His desire was to be able to experience his own spiritual fulfillment, his completion, spiritual growth, by practicing the mitzvot hatluyos la'aretz. Orla, kilayim, separating trumas and meiser, and Shemitah. Baruch Hashem, once again, we've returned to Erev Rosh Hashanah, Tavshin Ayin Hei. And it's not just any year. Baruch Hashem, we've made it once again for Shemitah year. And this to me is always a very emotional time, because in my work, I prepare so much for myself personally. This has been my limud for so many years, and it's, you know, in my work, I really try to bring the Mitzvos Luis Ha'aretz out to my customers. And so I've been building the gardens that I've been working in for the last many years and trying to getting them ready for Shemitah. And here I am finally on the cusp of that moment. So it's a very exciting and emotional time for me. You know, it's been an absence of 7 years since we last saw the last Shemitah. As it really, it's kind of like a raya. It's like, you know, something that doesn't happen too often is more special. We see, for example, we all have in our own possession unique articles that we don't take out so often. We take out maybe for Shabbos, or a Shabbos suit. We sleep for special occasions, a watch that our parents got us for our wedding anniversary, whatever it might be, we take out for the Yomim HaNorim, the high holidays. But Shemitah, Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us once every 7 years. And see, we see here in Raya that it's such a special event for him. And I just want to, you know, bring this home, because it's really a special event for him. It should be a special event for us. And we see that Kodesh Baruch Hu, as it says in the Torah, the Pasuk tells us, "Uvashana hashviit Shabbat Shabbaton yel la'aretz Shabbat la'Hashem. Sodcha lo tizra, ukarmecha lo tizmor, et safiach katzircha lo tiktzor, ve'et anvei nizircha lo tiftzor." We see that Shemitah is called Shabbos. People ask me, "Oh, you're a gardener, what are you going to do? I mean, Shemitah's coming." I tell them, "What do you mean, what am I going to do?" I said, they said, "You know, how are you going to earn a parnasa? Shemitah, what are you going to do? You know, like miskin, they look at me this way." And I tell them, I said, "Listen, I said, for me, you have to understand, Kodesh Baruch Hu thought so highly of those who worked the land of Israel that he instilled within the very nature of my profession a thing called Shabbos. A Klal Yisrael got Shabbos as a whole, but a profession, you know, the teachers today, they have an arrangement now. The government agreed that this would be a good idea, that they would have a sort of savings plan for 6 years, and they could take a year off in the seventh year. And they think this is a pretty novel idea. And you know what? It is a novel idea, but the only thing they forgot is that, of course, Baruch Hu gave it to those who worked the land thousands of years ago. It's written in his Torah. And I'm one of the recipients. I call myself a recipient of this gift of Shabbos, of Shemitah. So first of all, when I tell this to people, immediately they see my reaction is not "Oy miskin," but "What a privilege." And you know, Shabbos, as we know, hu makol habracha. So if someone is concerned about my parnasa, I tell them, listen, on Shabbos, we know El Al a few years ago decided that they weren't going to fly on Shabbos. And you know what their accounting department found? They found that in the 7 days that they used to work, they were actually now earning more in the 6 days since they took off the Shabbos. So people are worried about my parnasa. I'm not worried about my parnasa. It's makor habracha. I have 6 years after Shemitah to reap the bracha of my keeping the Shabbos, of my keeping Shemitah. But you know, I think, I'm going to assume that not all of you are, you know, nor farmers and nor gardeners and people who don't work the land and perhaps people who don't work in the shuk to distribute, you know, peros. So you're like most of the people, that you're not like me, and that's it. That's my profession. You're probably not, this is not your profession. So you're saying, okay, but that's nice for you, Dan, but, you know, Shemitah doesn't really, what about us? So it's interesting. So I want to just put this idea to you, because Shemitah really challenges our very understanding of what possession is, what ownership is. And I think these two ideas, which I'd like to get into a little bit more with Matt, are really central to what Shemitah is all about. Because it says, the land is mine. The Kodesh Baruch Hu tells us the land belongs to Him. And the Peros belongs to Him. Kodesh Baruch Hu is challenging us to think about possession and ownership. I think if there's a generation, if there's a time, if there's an age that's more prevalent and relevant, I think we're living in that time to ask ourselves throughout the Shemitah year, what's my relationship with the things that I possess? How do I view them as the owner? If we could just hold that throughout the Shemitah year and all the things that we have in our surroundings, because really, what is food at the end of the day? It's just another physical substance that helps keep the physical being alive, or the physical and spiritual together in this world. So it's same as with our cars and with our homes and with our money. These are all just physical things that we can maybe, again, reflect on when it comes to what is this possession to me and how do I view it as the owner. And let Shemitah and the many different lessons that we can learn from Shemitah, which we won't be able to get into, but this is something. Shemitah is a year long. It's the longest mitzvah in the Torah. It's not just the longest mitzvah in the Torah. It's the only mitzvah in the Torah that Kodesh Baruch Hu designated one full parsha to, which is Parshas Bahar. He designated the notion, the subject of Shemitah and Yovel, all to one parsha. Again, Ryan, this is a very chashuv thing to him. So these are some of the things that you yourselves can take away to think about during the Shemitah, to learn about it, because it says in the Torah, "Vetzivisi is birkosi." Anyone who learns about Shemitah, anyone who practices Shemitah on any of the levels that you can. If you have a home garden, Bezat Hashem, we'll get into that very soon, because I'm sure everyone has at least a little planter box on the windowsill if they live in an apartment, or perhaps they have an in-ground garden, perhaps they have this nice little indoor plant that they like. Everybody has that, I'm sure. Am I wrong? Huh? Okay. At least, as a gardener, that's been my experience, I can tell you. So at the very least, we all have also a chelek in being able to work with something that's natural, something that's called growing plant, something that is very noget to the very things that I do on a daily basis. So I think what I'd like to do now is really get into this few points of what we can do now before the Shemitah starts in the next few days. In whatever little time that we have, but something that if you could do, and then after I can get into some of the principles of how one is going to maintain any of your gardens, however this setting is, during the Shemitah year. Then I'd like to get into a little bit the types of food that one can buy, a little bit of Shemitah in the kitchen, and then just the last sentence or two at the end. Okay, so B'Zeiat Dishmaya, let's move weiter. The things that we should be doing now before Shemitah, for those who have an irrigation system, and they have a computer, a timer. If it's DC, meaning that it's run by battery, you should change your batteries. We do not want to find ourselves during the Shemitah year with a broken computer, and all of a sudden we see our plants miskin like this, and perhaps beyond the point of being able to salvage them. So change your batteries, and I would do it again just before Pesach. Even if you buy a good battery. Because you can't do anything about it if something should happen to your computer during the Shemitah year. And if it's a battery, you feel like a real, you know, like, oh, you know, not such a smart person, let's put it this way. So change your batteries now. Before Shemitah, before Pesach, also change your battery again. The way you should do it is, you know, Shemitah, there's a pecking order of how we like to do things. There's the preferred, and then there's the next, and then there's the following, and so on and so forth. So ideally, I like you to do is have your battery ready, and then flip open the battery case, and then take out the old battery, throw it in your bag, because you have really 8 seconds. Generally, most computers will retain their memory for 8 seconds. If they don't, then you have to reset the computer. But again, that's the next step down. We would like to lechatchila not have to reset the computer during the Shemitah if we don't have to. The other thing is pruning. Whatever pruning you could do now, I know there's only a few days left, and maybe you can't do really much pruning, but if something is overly grown that you want to prune for aesthetics purposes, not because, you know, it's growing into my driveway. Because if you don't have the time for that, technically speaking, anything that grows into your driveway or grows into a path, you can cut back during the Shemitah year legally lechatchila. You don't have to, you know, work, you know, after hours at midnight to already start pruning your bougainvillea vine in order to get it out of your driveway because you can't get your partner or scratching your car. If you need to, you can leave that for Shemitah. If you can do it now, then fine, do it now. Better to do it now. Again, this is the pecking order. But if you like aesthetically the way something should look, then you should prune it now. And then, because during Shemitah, you cannot prune things for aesthetic purposes alone. The other thing is watering. If you do water without a computer and you water by hand, then that's fine. Because I want you to, during the Shemitah, we'll get into this for a second now, is just water. And I would try that now, the next few days, you know, stretch out your water. If you do it every 2 days, do it every 3 days. See what happens to your plants. Because most of the time, during the Shemitah year, we lower the general rule is, you know, all these books, and I've read many, many books on Shemitah, and I've spoken to many rabbanim about this, and they bring out all these charts of, like, watering charts during the Shemitah year. And I kind of laugh at them because, you know, I'm a guy that's, like, hands-on, and I look at these charts, and I'm like, they're so not shayach to the lamitzius. You know, so I asked the Rebbe Fratz, I said, listen, I need a klal. Like, how do I... He goes, up to 30% less during the Shemitah year. So if you're hand watering, what is up to 30% less? Try now, you know, for the next couple of days. And during the Shemitah year also, you can always, you know, try to elongate. If you set up to 3 days, your plants are doing okay, then leave it. Then again, you have the changing seasons too. You have the winter season, which you probably maybe won't water at all because it rains and so on and so forth. So you want to water minimally. And I'll explain to you a little bit after why. Fertilizing. If someone hand waters, you cannot use any of the granular fertilizers because it works by water coming into contact with the outer shell. And this causes the breakdown of the minerals locked into the shells. You have a 6 month, you have an 8 month, you have a 12 month slow release fertilizer. Someone who hand waters cannot fertilize anything. If someone has a computer system and has drip irrigation, then you can fertilize. You can use any of the 12 month slow release Osmocote fertilizers, that would be fine. And it's be permissible to do before Shemitah. During Shemitah, you cannot apply any fertilizer whatsoever. Which means if you have a jerry can and you have a pump that's called a fertigation system, you cannot refill with the liquid fertilizer into your jerry can during the Shemitah. That is not permitted. If you have stuff in there coming into the Shemitah, you can let it run out. But you can't refill it after. But the slow-release fertilizer, the granular fertilizers, you can apply now, but once comes Rosh Hashanah, it's done. You cannot do it under any circumstances. Not you, not your kids, not your, you know, Filipino house cleaner, not nobody. You cannot do that.
Huh? I'm trying to understand. Up to 30% less with the water? Yeah. Meaning you can't water 50% less? So like up to 30% less?
No, so that's... No, you can... I'll tell you. And I'll get into this right now, but maybe I'll just... Watering is a matter of hefsed during the Shemitah year. Meaning, you know, maybe people have heard about something called like le'ukme and le'avruye during the Shemitah year, enhancement. So when it comes to watering, Chazal said this is falls in the category of loss, of hefsed. Because if you don't water your garden, what happens? It dies. That's called a hefsed. That's called a loss. So we have to water to the point where we are going to limnoa, to prevent a loss. Whatever that means. It's very complicated because you have to deal with soils. You have to deal with location, microclimates, wind, sun, it's types of plants and their water needs. It's very complex. So I'm telling you, as a general rule, water 30% less. The truth is that we're all, you know, we're like bubbies in the garden. You know, we love to feed, we love to give, we drink. Many times, I remember in the past, people used to come, my plants are dead. When I worked in the garden center many years ago, they used to bring me these little miskin plants that were completely drowned in water. I'm like, you killed your plant. No, I bought it this way. I'm like, no, it's all rotted. Look, you've been watering it. Yeah, I water every day, 3 times a day, tons of water. I said, you bubbied your plant too much. You gave it too much water. No, so we overwater. During the Shemitah year, we're not allowed to overwater because in many cases, a lot of plants actually like a good amount of water. So when I say 30% less, that's just a general rule. But if you find, like I said, that you can go and if you hand water another day, go another day. If you can put it down 40%, you see your plants are okay, then do that.
But if you only water like 10% less, that's also okay?
The general rule is between actually 20 to 30% less. Because again, we tend to overwater in any case, and if we go 20 to 30% less, then our plants should be fine. If all of a sudden it's the Shemitah year, your computer is 20 to 30% less, and you see your plants are wilting and they're really suffering from this, come move on. You can raise your timer, a little bit more, so your plants don't suffer loss. I have 2 more questions.
I have a fig tree on a pad can I water it once a week or something like that?
You can water it as much as it needs to survive, so that you don't lose it.
Oh, okay.
I can't tell you exactly how much that is because every site is different.
The
every
regular condition. Plant, the flowers you have to water, right?
The which one?
The flowers, the geraniums and things like that.
Everything will need water at some point. Geraniums, you're right, they're generally speaking, they're more drought tolerant, so they can handle less water. But we plant in gardens things that are heavy water users, things with our low water use. So there's a general rule here, yeah?
So have to water it as less as possible.
Less. The idea is if you water it less, then you're already in the spirit of Shemitah.
Yes,
we can only do the best that we can, especially that the gardens are so complex. I'm talking from 26 years of experience, a lot of experience, and I can only give you the general rule, and the general rule, you're in the spirit of Shemitah, the Kodesh Baruch Hu loves you for that.
I have a yard. Can I go through the lawn, to cut the weeds from the garden?
Yeah, let's talk about maintenance during the Shemitah year in a moment, okay? Yeah.
Just go back to the irrigation system. It sounded like you said that it's better not to let the computer be reset.
Right.
Does that mean that it is a problem changing the timer so that you're watering more or watering less?
No, you can.
So then what's the issue with it being reset?
There's a difference between something that is already set and you just playing with the amount of time that is on and off. For example, on Shabbos, you can move your Shabbos clock forward if you need to, right? But you can't turn on and off the Shabbos. Shemitah is a little bit different, yeah? Again, there's a pecking order of how... If, for example, your computer like blows up on you, something happens, I don't know, you go to it, it's not the batteries, it's dead. The computers, you changed the battery 2 weeks ago, you know the battery's fine as well. You have to change the computer. So go ahead, change the computer and reset again. Because if you don't do that, then you'll lose your garden. And of course, Baruch Hu did not intend in any which way for us to lose during the Shemitah year. And I'll get into that in just a moment, okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
About watering, just to close that.
Yes.
So the garden is generally for knowing, right? So things start looking wilting and drooping, but you're not worried about losing them. They're not going to die. They just don't look good. Can you water to maintain a certain look where they're not drooping or wilting at all? But you still, let's say you can do that at 30% less or 20% less. Can I then, if I start seeing wilting, but it's not, I know my stuff and I know they're not dying. Bushes have prachim and then maybe there's not as many prachim. Like this, like can I water to keep that level up or no? I should expect it to look like...
Right, so you're kind of reaching a little bit into something called noy nikah hefsed. It's a big machlokes, and I'll just tell you in general, everyone would agree in such a case that you would still not be able to water more, because that are one of the things that we're not allowed to do for aesthetic purposes. You know, again, Shemitah, it's a challenge to us. It's a challenge to, again, our sense of control over things. You know, we want our garden. A garden is planted for aesthetic beauty. We want it to look beautiful. We want it to thrive and to be excellent and to be the best. So it makes, we like that. And you know, we like when people come by and also say, hey, what a nice garden you have. You know, it's, it gives us a good feeling as well that we put the work into it and people appreciate that. But the Shemitah here is that we have to, again, it's a challenge, it's an inner challenge. You know, say, you know what, my plants will be okay. It'll survive the Shemitah here. We'll get past this, you know, you and me. Don't worry, my viburnum, my whatever, my ever plant it is, you know. See, you won't be as strong this year, but you know what? You'll have a lot of bracha for the 6 years after, and you'll do more than you ever expected me to do, you know.
Isn't wilting like a sign of like an unhealthy plant?
Yeah, so I'd be very surprised if anybody would experience much wilt during the Shemitah year. We're not that risky to bring our watering to the point where we're willing to actually see the garden wilt. We're not that risky. Ideally, that's what the Svarim tells to do. But Lamaise, I know that I will have a hard time myself letting my garden get to the what's called the wilting point, which is that even though this last year I took my garden off of irrigation and I tested a lot with hand water to see what the limitation of my garden is, and I was actually very surprised. I mean, unbelievable. I was watering like 2 times a day, you know, tons of water. And I was going for like 6 days with no water in the middle of the summer in my garden. And things were not looking so great, surviving, somewhat wilting. But that point was far from where I ever thought it would be. So I would be very surprised if you get to the wilting point. If you do get to the wilting point, then you have a commandment to water your garden. Yeah? That's what a Kosh Baruch Hu wants you to do, because he doesn't want you to lose it. All right, let's go weiter. All right. Principles in the garden during the Shemitah year. We're just going to just cover these briefly. There are 5 prohibitions issuing from the Torah. They are Ktsira, Zriya, Ktsira, Zmira, Betsira, and Harisha. Zriya being planting, Ktsira being not harvesting in the normal way. Zmira is specifically dealing with grapevine pruning. Betsira is also dealing with grape harvest. And Harisha is plowing. These 5 things are prohibited during the Shemitah year.
What about the grapes?
Right, so you know what? I'll get into that just momentarily, because that's a good question. It really, the only 2 prohibitions that really, I guess are all encompassing for our purposes are Zriya and Ktsira. Zriya is the big one, is planting, any type of planting, from seed, from atzitz, in a nylon bag, in a pot on a third floor, whether it's atzitz nakuv, whether it's atzitz she'enu nakuv, and that could be a big chiddush to some people, but that's the halacha. There are no hetirim for planting in an atzitz she'enu nakuv that is outside. Yeah. So an atzitz nakuv is a pot with a hole in it, so water can drain out.
Right. As long as it's outside, you're saying.
Right. So as long as it's outside. Now.
Inside not a problem.
Okay. Inside.
Sprouting like seeds in my house, like for the kitchen, like sprouting beans. Can I do that for like eating purposes? Does that count?
Right. So these are all very good questions, and I'll have to get to that in just a moment once we get to the derabbanan. But I need to answer that question. So please don't make me forget. Okay. Because I also sprout at home. So an atzitz she'enu nakuv is a pot that doesn't have a hole in it. But nobody has pots without holes in it. So people say, if it's on my capping stone, on my merpeset, on the third floor or on the roof, that's already called eino nakuv, because look at it, it's so far from the ground. Even if it has a hole in it, it's called eino nakuv. And many people have this misunderstanding that it would be permissible to take something from the garden center and plant in there. And even if somebody did say that was permissible, you have another problem of buying a plant that was most likely seeded illegally, so to speak, prohibitedly, during the Shemitah year. And now again, where do you want to put your money? Where do you want to put your support? You want to put your support where people are doing things that are not prohibited during the Shemitah year, and we know the Shemitah is very, you know, but there is no permissibility to plant in Otzis Nakov or Otzis En Nakov, whether it's third floor or the 10th floor of a building. That's very important to know. As long as it's outdoors, yeah. If it's indoors, the truth is that there's a machlokis. If it's indoors, if the ritzba is chotzetzet, there are those who are makel and say that you can actually seed indoors. And so, if you are going to seed indoors, let's get back to so I don't forget, and also since we're on the subject, if you are going to seed indoors, which I personally don't do, but if you are, and there is a halachic reinforcement for such a thing to do, is if you do it like for sprouts, this is probably the best way because there's absolutely no soil medium there whatsoever, unless you're doing fenugreek and wheatgrass, you're doing just water, yeah? Okay, so in such a case, that would be in a glass jar in any case, it would be okay in a glass jar because there's no machlokas whether that's chotzetzet or not, so.
I have, let's say, if there's a certain plant that's thick, when I wash it off, a whole bunch of seeds get in the water. I sometimes just take that water and just dump it out into my pot of plant. Does that be counted? And things grow from that. Is that counted as planting? Or is it? Do you like that? I like that, yes. Okay, so it's not prohibited for you.
Okay. Yeah, it's meaning that it's nichalei. You might say, you know, if the varsha enu miskaven, yeah, thing that you didn't mean to happen on Shemitah, generally is made.
Right.
But because you enjoy that when that happens, that all of a sudden becomes good for you, that's nichalei, and then we're going to say it's nichalei is, let's say it'll be not, it'll be prohibited for you to do. So just try not to do it
in
the
pan. Right.
No, right. No. Put it in the sink if you can, or on the concrete.
So yeah. When I sprout, I do it just in a
column. Is that
a problem you're saying about the glass jar?
That what's that?
If I do sprouting, like beans or whatever, for eating, not for planting. I do it in a colander, like a strainer,
yeah,
which has holes everywhere, and I don't do it in a glass jar. Is that a problem?
Right, so you have to put it on a hard piece of plastic or over a piece of glass.
I mean, it's on my counter. That's hard.
Yeah, but is it marble? Yeah. If it's marble, then fine.
Oh, yeah, fine.
Or on a hard piece of plastic. Yeah,
that's fine.
If it's real shayish, yes, it's fine.
What's not much?
Well, it could be a composite that's composed of various materials that is glued together. If it's shayish mamish, then it's fine. Yeah, I agree. Let's try to keep some of the questions now for after. Some of you guys got it out, which I know some of the beginning you got to let out air, you know, which is fine. But let's try to move by to so because we have some ground to cover. Okay, so now the Isurim Derabbanan, the ones that are prohibited by the rabbis, are all those things that we do in the 6 years outside of Shemitah that are what are called Le'avruyeh, that are enhancing the garden. Fertilizing, watering, staking, weeding, pruning, deadheading, all these different things that enhance the overall aesthetic beauty of the garden, the rabbis prohibited. They actually learned it out from the Torah. We're not going to get into that. But these are not just some any rabbinical prohibitions. These are rabbinical prohibitions commanded by the Torah of the derisas. And again, not to get into that. But all these things that I basically do in the garden during the 6 years, I'm not allowed to do in the seventh year. You know, we cultivate the ground, for example, to get more water before the winter time. All these things are not permitted in the Shemitah year. There is, however, a concept that tells us that it's called like this. It goes like this. There's a heter asiyas melachad de rabbanan b'makom hefsed. There's a permissibility to do what the rabbis otherwise prohibited in a makom, in a place of loss. Now, there's a little bit of a disagreement and a very large agreement over what is called a loss. Everybody agrees. What would you say is called a loss? Die, death. Everyone agrees that death is called a loss. Anything else?
Lacking fruit, maybe?
Huh?
Lacking fruit, if it won't fruit afterwards?
If it definitely won't fruit afterwards, then yes, some people call that a loss, yes.
An injury to a plant?
Huh?
An injury to a plant?
What you might be also saying or leading to is perhaps if a plant is injured and you won't be able to get the plant back to health after Shemitah, but so you have to do something now, yes, it's also called a loss. Meaning if you can't get something back to its state that it's in after Shemitah, then that's called a loss. Even if you can get it back into its state, health, after Shemitah, but with a tremendous amount of time and energy and expense and fertilizer and your gardener's got to come 10 extra times, then that's already called something you can do during the Shemitah year. So anything else?
Something that's going to cause it to, it's going to be less fruit in general that fell on the tree?
A little bit less fruit, no, that's not, well, no fruit, like, yes, but...
Like a lot less, like you see like an orange tree all of a sudden that has like hundreds and all of a sudden down the lake.
Well, I'll tell you, the problem with that is all my years of experience with fruit trees is that, you know, I see it every single year. Like, one tree produces once a lot, and the next tree doesn't produce at all. One year, and then the next year, it's flipping around, this tree is producing a lot, and that... So, that's not a raya, that the problem is Shemitah.
Okay,
so we don't go back. Usually, most of the issues when it comes to fruits are and the permissibility to do certain types of activities on fruit trees are usually reserved halachically in that sense for the farmers and those who have orchards and grow fruit for commercial purposes. But for the homeowner purposes, generally, there's really no extra heter because it's fruit that you can do certain things in order to enhance the amount of productivity of the tree. There's two more things I want to add. One is called danger. So for example, I mentioned before about the bougainvillea, you know, scratching your car every time you go into the driveway and it's like you got to cut that branch off, or your rose bush, which has now sprouted a new branch that's going into your path and you have to kind of move around it, or it's, you know, scratching your leg or whatever the case might be. If it's a danger, you're allowed to get rid of that danger during the Shemitah, even if it's doing what's called one of the melachos that the rabbis prohibited, which is pruning. You can't prune during Shemitah. But hey, I got to... This bougainvillea keeps scratching my car as I go by. You can cut what's scratching your car back. You can't cut. You can't say, oh, now that I already started cutting, I'm going to all of a sudden now give the whole thing a shape. You know, call my gardener over. This is scratching my car. Do you mind just taking a little bit more off the top and on the back over there, just around? You can't do any of that. You can only take out what is mafria, what is causing damage. Same with roses or anything like that. Again, when it comes to pruning roses, by the way, you cannot... Roses are a little problematic because during Shemitah and any time of the year, we like to cut roses for cut flowers. You know, we might bring it to the house. Some of the ladies like to do that. I'm a little bit ladylike. I like to do that too for myself. But I like to cut roses. The problem with cutting roses is that most of the time when a person cut roses, I don't know... at least for myself, I look for the node and I look for the right one in the right direction. Like I do a professional cut. If you're taking in roses during the Shemitah year, you should basically do this. Give your cutters to your kids and say, go ahead, have fun, just make sure you leave me the flower. That's it. You do not want to risk it in any which way doing a professional cut. If you know how to cut roses or you know how to cut roses to take in as a cut rose, so to speak, and you yet know where to cut the best place for that, you can't do that on Shemitah. That's very, very dangerous. That's like really karov to the Isser of Zemira. So, in particular, roses. So you got to be very careful about roses. Give it somebody else to cut, someone who doesn't know
other
what they're doing.
Then
the flowers you're allowed to enjoy bringing.
Other flowers are just this specific issue with roses?
No, it's a specific issue with roses, yeah? For two reasons. Number one, there's a suffix if roses contain Kedush Shemitah, if it's a scented flower. And number two, because of the way... What's the whole Isser of Zemira, right?
Stimulating the growth.
Exactly. It stimulates the growth. What happens when you prune back grapes in the wintertime? What are you doing? It's the only type of fruit tree, along with kiwi, where you actually have to prune out all this wood in order to stimulate a whole new generation of wood that will sprout out. And as a result, from there, the clusters of grapes will develop. Whereas fruit trees, you never do that with fruit trees. You don't, an apple tree, you don't cut out, or citrus, you don't cut out large sections of your citrus tree and then you wait for the new growth to generate and then, that's not how you do it. Grapes is unique that way. So roses too, is the same thing. When you cut out roses, you're actually cutting down. For example, what's called a winter pruning with roses is that you go in and you cut hard down. Your rose can be like this tall, even taller, and you go and you cut it down really hard, like into a certain, you know, structure, and all this new growth rejuvenates, and then your rose, you know, emerges from the new growth. So it's the stickle of Isser Zemira on roses.
So we should be doing our winter pruning now, or just forget about it?
I've done, I'll tell you something, what's going to happen, two things will happen if you don't do your winter pruning now. A, your rose bush will end up growing very tall. Number two, you'll get less roses. That's it.
And grapes?
I'll tell you something. Grapes, I spoke to some vineyard growers, and they basically told me that some of them are not going to do it, some of them will do it. I would be inclined to tell you to prune your grapes back, if you can, before Shemitah, to prune your grapes back. Which just remind me, I forgot to do that in somebody's house. I'm not going back there. Okay. Yeah, and the other thing, if you do prune your roses back now, which I'm doing, I'm pruning all my roses back. You know, winter here is never that strong, generally, that we have to worry about dieback, frost, things like this. And that's the whole fear of pruning late, so to speak, what's called, you know, pruning on the cusp of winter, is that your new growth will come in, you'll get a cold spell, you'll have frost, it'll die back the new growth, it'll cause disease. We don't live in northeastern United States. We don't have that problem, generally speaking, over here. So you can feel pretty good about cutting your roses now. And I would encourage you that, because A, you're going to get new growth, you're going to get good flowering, and you're not going to get 2 meter tall long roses come middle of next summer. Yeah.
For the danger issue, when you have those weeds, those spiky weeds, are you allowed to just get it out so it doesn't keep coming back because you don't want to step on it, this and that, or can you only just prune the top?
Okay, so if...
It's not just an aesthetic thing, it's that...
Right. So when it comes to weeding, let me get into that in a second, okay?
Is there anything we should think of when we're just buying, if we want to buy flowers for Shabbos from a stand?
Yeah, so you have to, better to buy flowers that from a stand that has a heksher. Yeah, because if not, then you could be buying things that were either harvested the wrong way or that contain Kedusha Shvi's, for example, some scented lilies and some scented roses, you know, and then you might not know that and you might dispose of it in the wrong way. So, I would definitely encourage you, and during the Shemitah year, as previous Shemitahs, you'll have flower stands that will have, you know, their own Teudah. So all these prohibitions from the rabbis, we cannot do that are causing an enhancement to your garden in the seventh year. But if there's going to be b'makom hefsed, then you'll be able to do any of the rabbinical prohibitions. That's very important to know. Any of the rabbinical prohibitions you'll be able to do b'makom hefsed. That we said either death, meaning your gardener comes and said, listen, if we don't treat this tree now, it's going to die. Go ahead, do whatever you want. Yeah? Like the rabbis give you a blessing for that. Go ahead. You know, if you can't get your tree back after Shemitah, you're not going to be able to return the shape unless you prune it during the Shemitah once or twice. Go ahead and prune it, whatever the case may be. I want to talk just briefly about lawns, hedges, and topiary. These are three very important things. The whole issue is, as we talked about Zmira, is to rejuvenate and to encourage growth. Is that you're pruning, the whole idea behind pruning is in order to encourage growth. That's the prohibition. Pruning, basically what it does is that it causes rejuvenation and new growth. But what happens if your pruning doesn't cause that? If, for example, you have a fully thick, mature hedge. When you take your megazemet gova, your pruning hedge, your hedging, I don't even know what they're called in English anymore, hedgers?
Hedge clippers,
yeah. No, but you have your scissors and then you have the megazemet, right? So when you take that and you start and you prune your hedge, you're not pruning it I'm talking about a fully thick, mature hedge. Your pruning is not causing it to become thicker. It's reached its critical mass of thickness. It's still growing out, but in terms of the thickness, it's not causing that anymore because it's fully thick. And your purpose for pruning, your reason for pruning is to maintain its form. Just like a lawn. If your lawn, and hardly anybody has a fully grown in lawn, but in the case that one of you do have that lucky, unique garden, you know, items in this generation, then you'd be able to mow your lawn, prune your hedge, or maintain your topiary. You know, these, for example, they have syzygiums, they have viburnums, they have hadassim that are shaped in these like bowls. Many of us see it, or some other type of shape. If it's fully grown and it's not going to get any thicker, which means what? When you buy from the garden center, let's say, oh, I'm going to run now and go to the garden center. Even what you buy in the garden center today needs a good 2 months of pruning, at least, before it becomes really thick. Same with sod. Sod will take about 2 to 3 months, at least, from planting or from laying, before it becomes fully thick, from mowing it plenty. And same with a hedge. Hedge could take even longer, depending on how you get the hedge. If it's like little plants, until it reaches the point, it could take even years. But in the case that you do have this situation, which I do in many of my gardens, then there is a halachic opinion, not just a make a halachic opinion, but a very strong halachic opinion that says that you can prune in order to maintain its shape during the Shemitah year, but with a shinui. So for example, if you go in with a megazemen gova, with a machine, and you go in and prune it instead with, you know, they have all kinds of neat cutting equipments. I don't even know what they're called in the garden center. But you have to do it with a shinui. Maybe you're going to do something, you can take your pruning shears and do it backwards. Yeah. Maybe you're going to use it, you have a ball-shaped topiary in a pot by the front door of your house. You might do it, instead of you doing it with your pruning shears, you'll do it with a pair of house scissors. Yeah. These sort of things, yeah. When it comes to, by the way, the issue of danger, meaning when it's a bougainvillea scratching your car or the rosebush, there you don't have to do with a shinui, by the way. You can just go in and cut out what bothers you, which means what? Very important. Let's say I'm walking on a path, and this line here is the edge of the path. I might want to cut it further back, because that's what's good for me. But I can't do that, because further back isn't bothering me. If I'm just going to cut it where it bothers me, that's already called a shinui, and therefore you don't have to do with any other different type of utensil, what's at all?
Can you say anything that's sticking out of the fence is already going to be bothering, or is it only like, I mean, if it's 5 centimeters out of the fence or something like that, it might not necessarily. But if a kid happens to be playing,
right? So
you don't know.
Right. So if you see, that's a very good question. If you see something that is on the verge of becoming danger, then you can cut it back a little bit in order to not have it reach the point where it actually can cause danger. Exactly. By the way, which also applies for flowers. You know, some flowers attract a lot of bees, and you're just like, oh, there's so many bees, my kids are afraid to go out. You can go in there and you can cut up all the flowers, again, in a non-professional way, not that you're looking to cut it in the best place, but you can go in to cut off all the flowers of a lavender bush or some other type of flowering bush that will attract a lot of bees. You could do that during the Shemitah year, because, again, it could be a danger to your kids. Also, by the way, in terms of mowing lawns, again, most of the time our lawn isn't very thick. So how would you do it during the Shemitah year in that case? So generally, you would do it when it reaches either the point where it's a danger, because I don't know what the situation is like out here. I don't even know where I am, to tell you the truth. I was given instructions on the phone. They were guiding me the whole way, and I just saw blackness around me and car lights, and I thought it was way out of Jerusalem. I was told that I live in Beit Vegan. I was told you can get to the Kotel from here, and like with the shortcuts and everything, in like 2 hours. I'm like, it takes me an hour and 20 minutes from my house in Beit Vegan. You say I'm home. It must be really close. So I don't know, you know, if you have like fields, for example, where the weeds and grass and things grow very tall, and there might be danger of snakes and rodents, then it would be permissible, for the sake of keeping the area safe, to cut down the tall weeds. Better to do it by a chermesh, a weed whacker, than to go in there and start pulling everything out. Yeah, which leads me to answering your question. Of those thorny bushes, those thorny weeds, if, for example, the only reason why, you know, your intention on Shemitah is very important. I'm telling my workers, I say, guys, you know, one thing that Shemitah is causing us to do, and I actually taught a course for gardeners 2 times over, which comprised of 7 classes and 18 hours of class time. It was a professional course for how to maintain gardens during the Shemitah year for gardeners. And I asked them questions like, why do you do what you do, for example? And I was surprised. You have a group of 10 guys sitting before me, and they like professionals, and they're not even sure why they do what they do. You know, I said, guys, during the Shemitah year, you have to know every reason for what you do. You got to know before you touch anything, what is it? You got to combine halachic knowledge with horticultural knowledge. And if that's so, what's my intention? For example, I'll give you an example where intention is so important. And this is going to get into my next point and the last point about maintaining gardens during the Shemitah year. Anything that's called toeles hatzemach is not permitted to during the Shemitah year. So let's use your example of the thorny weed that's growing in your path next to your property. So if the thorny weed is there, and you know, you just don't like it, or you're worried that if it's going to cause a danger, damage to your kids because it's that thorny, then it's best just to cut it down. First of all, you could do that no matter what. However, if it's growing up and it's growing next to a plant that you do like, and you think to yourself, you know what, it's also shading out this other plant that I like, and if I took it out, it would help that plant better, and also I wouldn't have this ugly weed, and it's, you know, it's also thorny, so of course it could also be a danger. He told me if it's a danger, you know, I can always take it out. You know, again, you see all the cheshbon. If your purpose is to what's called tuel satsemach, you're doing an act that's helping another plant that you do want, or the plant that itself, for example, that is going to the plant that itself, for example, like taking off flowers that are half dead. These things are called tuel satsemach. You would not be able to pull out this weed. Because if your purpose is to have the plant that you do want next to it grow better. Because a lot of people think, you know, weeds are taking water and energy from the other plants that I do like around it. So if I pull out the weeds, then my plant, the one that I do like and want in the garden, will have more koach to do what it's supposed to do. So during Shemitah, you would not be able to do that. However, if they're going to choke out your plant, that's why Shemitah is not, it's kind of complicated, yeah? You got to just have a lot of knowledge about it. The weeds are going to grow so tall that it's going to choke out your plant, and it's going to cause thinning and death of certain branches down below because it's not getting the kind of light it needs. And also, and your reason is, hey, I might lose my plant. That's called a hefsed. In which case, then you can cut the weeds back. Always better to cut the weeds back. Once you cut the weeds back, if you want it to go in with a Roundup, you can go in with a Roundup. If you cut it back, better to do it with a chermesh than to do it by hand. Again, there's an order, there's a preference. The idea is we try as least as possible to do things what's called yashar, directly. So if we could do things indirectly more, meaning it's a little bit different if I'm going in and causing the blades to cut versus my just going in with the machine and letting the blade do the cutting itself. I'm just guiding the machine or letting the Roundup, the chemical, kill the weed versus my pulling it up and so on and so forth. Yeah.
What if I want to pull out the thorn to eat? I mean, there's a lot of thorny bushes that are edible and I do pick them to eat them. Is there a problem with picking to eat? I mean, on Shemitah.
No, there's no problem to pick them
in. Is there a problem pulling it out from the roots, or does it just have to be cut?
Again, if it's you're pulling it out from the roots, in general, there's no problem with pulling out a plant from its root in any case during Shemitah. Again, you have to know what the reason is. If your reason is just to eat it, meaning you're not there because you want to make room for more plants to grow in, you're not pulling it because you want other plants around it to be healthier. You pull it because you want to eat the thing. So you can go ahead and pull it. Better if you cut it back, but if you want to pull it, if you want to pull it out from the roots, you can pull it out from the roots.
See, in terms of what I'm eating, I don't have to worry about what I'm picking. As long as it's free. My purpose is more purpose is of improving the plant. That's more a problem.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pulling out weeds from a garden.
Right.
Would you consider that a problem because you're taking out the weeds and help the garden, or it's just directly pick them out?
Right, so weeding is one of the hardest things to kind of judge in a garden. In general, we weed for two reasons, really. Because it's aesthetically unpleasant, and because also we want to leave more room for the plants that we do want, that they should have a better and easier time at doing the things that we want them to do. So really our feelings about weeding are mixed. So I would say, if the weed is not near one of the plants, it's further away, then pull it out from the roots. If it's closer to the plant, cut it back.
You're saying a weed that's in open grass may pop up with weeds, right?
In grass?
In grass, yeah, the weeds that pop up, coatseam on them, you know, you walk them and they...
No, so again, with coatseam, you can cut back with coatseam, no problem. You can pull it out. But if it... Wait, you're talking about from a lawn?
A little lawn, yeah.
So what I would say is like this, is that generally weeds propagate by a few means. Number one, they self-seed, meaning that they reach a point where they grow so tall that they develop seed pods, and then they release their seeds. Number one. Number two, wind and birds doing their dropping, and little animals and so on and so forth, yeah? And also sometimes if just in the soil, stuff that seeds have been laying dormant already for one or two seasons, they just found the right conditions to sprout. So ideally is that if there's even a few of these weeds in the middle of the lawn, I think the purpose would be that you don't want it to spread. You don't want it to spread and all of a sudden take over your lawn. If it's for the sake of the lawn, you can't pull it out. And in fact, even if it wasn't for the sake of the lion, it was for the sake of the future, meaning if I let it go to seed, all these seeds will end up everywhere in the future, I'm going to have a big problem with my lawn, then just cut it back. Best thing to do. Basically, I'll be honest with you.
Take them
out. Yeah. No. No. But I'll tell you. No, but again, because in general, we don't have a just a... Our intention is not just for the aesthetic purposes. We always want to weed because we know it's not aesthetically pleasant, and we know also it's helping the other plants. However, yeah, you should know something, that when you're dealing with a lawn, you're eventually going to mow it, so you're going to mow over the weed in any case. Guys, let's just go right through, because we have only a few more minutes over here, and I just want to get into just what you'll be able to find in the shuk during the Shemitah year. There's a few other things I wanted to get into, but we won't have the time for that.
So you can mow the lawn.
You can mow the lawn, definitely. You can mow the lawn. When it gets too high, when it's going to start to seed, you can mow it, but try to mow it higher. If your lawn is fully grown and fully thick, you can mow it in a regular, kind of with the regular way, but you got to do it with a little bit of a shunai. Half one day, half another day, and so on and so forth. Just so it doesn't look like you're doing things the regular way. The types of food you guys can find during the Shemitah year available in the shuk will be things like oats or beis din. Oats or beis din food does contain Kedusha Shvis. The other thing is homegrown veggies and fruit. They also will contain Kedusha Shvis. You'll have also what's called Matzah Menupak Minakarka. And this is food that was grown in greenhouses that are Menutak, cut off from the ground. And there's a whole legal permissibility to plant in this way. That will also be available. They will not have Kedusha Shvis. You'll have sixth-year produce. For example, a lot of the potatoes and onions and garlic and carrot, a lot of the root crops that you'll be buying way into the Shemitah year, in many cases will still be sixth-year produce, including apples in many cases, and of course the different types of grains, and of course the grains that don't grow here at all. Like rice, for example, doesn't grow here. So you can, quinoa doesn't grow here. So you can, you know, that stuff will never contain Kedusha Shvis because it's not grown in the land of Israel. Vegetables grown by non-Jews in Israel. We're talking mostly about Arab produce. You have basically two schools of thought. You have the Beis Yosef and you have the Mabit. One says that, the Beit Yosef said that that a non-Jew that grows food in the land of Israel, he has the strength, so to speak, by his presence to uproot any Kedusha of the land. The Mabit says no, the Kedusha of the land is stronger than the one or the non-Jew who plants in it, and therefore any of the produce that comes out of his property will, yes, contain Kedusha Shvis. That's why there's a difference of opinion, there's a difference of purchase behavior in Bnei Brak, for example, and Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, generally speaking, so to speak, holds by the Beis Yosef that says that they do not contain Kedusha Shvis, because an Arab, this is really what we're talking about, we're talking about non-Jews here, talking about Arabs. No, it's not to do with Hetem Mehir, yeah? This is strictly Arab grown, for example, in the Jordan Valley, in some parts of, where in the West Bank, and so on and so forth, yeah?
We have, unfortunately, Jews who try to circumvent the whole thing and sell it to Arabs.
There's a lot of that, yeah. You got to be very careful with that. There's a lot of that. Yeah, every Shemitah year, there's hundreds of thousands of tons of illegal produce that Jews grew. They're circumventing, giving off to Arabs. Arabs are then handing it over to distributors like Tnuva, Breishis, and so on and so forth. And it's a real big balagan. Every year, there's a certain percentage of Arab-grown produce in the shuk. About 15 to 20% is Arab. During the Shemitah year, it doubles and triples. Yeah, there's a lot more. I personally don't eat very much vegetables during the Shemitah year, except for what my customers grow and a few other things that I can buy. For example, there's also hydroponics, which is also being now more and more used as a method of growing food in Israel by Jews, but only leafy greens. Yeah, it's not permitted to grow in Israel proper hydroponically things like cucumbers, tomato during the Shemitah year. They do it outside of Shemitah year, but during the Shemitah year, these things are not you know, sort of say kosherly grown, you know, that make it kosher for Shemitah.
Can I but take like a scallion or something and put it into a cup of water in my house and let that grow?
And let it sprout in a cup of water?
It'll regrow.
Yeah, if it's in a glass cup and something.
Does it in your house or on your windowsill?
What's that? Yes, it does, very much.
But if the windowsill is like over your property, meaning it's outside the window, but it actually.
If the elements come in contact with it, then it's not. It better not to do it in a place where it's going to be. If you're going to do this, don't do it in a place where it's going to be good for the growth of the plant.
So, from the Golan or from the Negev should be fine.
First of all, it depends. Who grew it? Yeah, if it's grown on Jewishly owned land by Jews, you know, then you also have the Hetter Mechira, for example. If they did the deal with the Hetter Mechira, then that's a halachic permissibility. That is also in this generation, it's still the most widely sourced out way of obtaining food during the Shemitah year. For example, outside of Yerushalayim and some other few other areas, you can't find hardly anything but Hetter Mechira. Rav Kook held that, you know, that if that Hetter Mechira and his time certainly was a viable and necessary, I'd say, use that word, need for the farmers in Eretz Israel. But even so, he gave the permissibility that only non-Jews should plant and not Jews. Yeah. So today they call that Hetter Mechira Lechumra. Yeah. That a non-Jew is not going to do the seeding, even though it's owned by Jewish land. But Hetter Mechira is another option. And the final option, which is Baruch Hashem becoming a much more viable option, is the area called the Arava, which is in the south. Because technically speaking, according to every opinion, that area below the Kav Shloshim is not called Eretz Yisrael, not biblically, not ever, not Ole Bavel, not Ole Mitzrayim, nothing. It's considered Chutz La'aretz, like Canada, United States, France, and England, South Africa. It's not Eretz Israel at all, even though it's politically owned by the government of Israel. It's not considered Eretz Israel at all.
What's with the Golan?
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly what areas specifically would be considered already outside of Eretz Israel and inside of Eretz Israel. I'm not sure what those kavim are. It's very common because the whole issue of there are places in Jordan, for example, that if a Jew went to grow there, you'll have to separate Trumas and Meiser. You'll have to, because of Kibush Yochi and so on and so forth. It's a complicated issue. But in terms of what we know is in the south, for example, the Arava area, which is heavily an area that's heavily agriculturalized, then it's good to look for stuff that's grown from there. One thing that... Okay, so let's get into that just for a second. If you come into contact with stuff that has Kedusha Shviz, Ashrechem, it's a beautiful thing. You know, this year we have this special sanctity that's in the land, that's everywhere we are in the air in Eretz Yisrael, and its core, its center is in the food that we eat. If you have that, you should enjoy eating it. You should be conscientious while you eat it. However, you also have to treat it a little bit differently. So, which means that Chazal set out two principles, which I wanted to get into a little bit about. So we have a few more minutes. Okay, so give me 5 more minutes and then we'll finish, yeah? I just wanted to get something which I thought was, which I think is very important, is that, you know, the issue of when I start when I talk about possession and ownership, I think, other than the basic pshat of Zriya, which we can't plant, Katsira is an interesting thing, because Katsira is that basically that we can't harvest in the normal way. That's the basic definition of or iser or prohibition of katsiras. We can't harvest in a normal way, which means what? Let's say we have a pomegranate tree. Right now the pomegranates are ready for Rosh Hashanah. We're going to put them in, you know, eat them, say Shechiana, whatever we might do. And we're going to go, we're going to pick 20 pomegranates from our tree. We cannot do that when they contain Kedusha Shviz. By the way, this year's fruit will not contain Kedusha Shviz. The fruit will generally start coming to the shuk that will contain Kedusha Shviz, or in your garden, only by the middle of Shemitah. Because it goes after Chanoto, not after Lakita. I mean, it goes after the time that the fruit came into the flowering stage, and not to the time of the picking, like we do vegetables. So all fruit, you will have nothing to worry about. Any fruit that you have on your trees right now, including citrus and pomelos, which you'll only harvest way after in January, even in February in some cases. I harvested pomelos already in March from that were growing for almost 9 months on the tree, they will not contain Kiddush Feis. It's next year's flowering period, meaning what happens now from Tishrei, and the flowering of the fruit trees and it's ripening. So pomegranates, for example, will not contain Kiddush Feis until the end of Shemitah and into the eighth year. So this is very important to know, because you might think, okay, it's Shemitah, I'm picking my pomegranate, they have Kedusha Shviz, what do I do? None of the fruit that we have now at all will contain Kedusha Shviz. It's only minimum starting in the middle of Shemitah, and in most cases running until sometimes even almost to the ninth year even, in some cases. And even more so with wine, it'll happen all the 7 years from Shemitah to Shemitah because of Otzer Beis. There'll always be some amount of Boch Hashem, Kedusha Shviz, in the marketplace. So when it comes to Katsira, it says we can't harvest the normal way. Akosh Baruch Hu, during the Shemitah year, is teaching us something very powerful, and it comes back to possession and ownership. What are the two features that say, hey, this guy has what's called bailus, he's ownership? What are the two central, you know, masim that will say, hey, this signifies the nature of ownership? I'll tell it to you guys, okay? One is, I can take from what I have as much as I want of it, and then whatever I have, I can do with it whatever I want with it. Uh-huh. If I have $1 million in my account, I could take $1 million out, I could take $1, I could take whatever I have, I can take as much of it as I want. And likewise, if I have a beautiful house and I want to set it afire, okay, I might have a problem with the area, but if I have a beautiful house and I want to set it aflame, no one's going to tell me I can't do that. Whatever I have, I can destroy. I can do with whatever I have, whatever I want with it. The beautiful thing about Katsira is that Akosh Baruch Hu, during the Shemitah year, is trying to remind us that nothing really belongs to us. The true owner of everything that grows here and everything that we have, the source of it all is Akosh Baruch Hu. So, Lamaisa, halachically, how do you deal with, for example, Peru Shvi? So during the Shemitah year, the Isser of Katsira tells us that a person can only pick 3 meals worth of produce off the street. So next Rosh Hashanah, Tavshin Ein Vav, when your pomegranates are ready or your grape clusters are ready to harvest, then you can't go in and pick as much as you want. You can only pick, each member of the house can only pick enough for 3 meals worth. Why? Because the Kosh Bohu is telling you, you're not the owner of this. It's called Hefker. It's called Hefker, and therefore your neighbor and the person down the street in the other city and a Jew from North America can come here and has equal rights to the fruit on your tree like you do. The fruit, that is, not the tree itself, but the fruit of that tree. Why? Because Akosh Bohu has done one thing. He's removed the nature of bailus of saying, whatever you have, you could do whatever you want with it. You could take as much as you want of it. No, you can't. That's one level of removal of ownership. So therefore, how does it come out, the halacha? Is you can only pick 3 meals worth. That's all a Kosh Baruch Hu is going to allow you to pick.
Question. Sorry. What if you want to do like pickling things or like olives or something? You can't do it then.
Yeah, you have a problem. People who pickle, people who make wine, you have to go to Otzer Beis then, you got to do all different things. You can't really do that, yeah? So it's a problem during Shemitah. It's not that it's a problem, it's a blessing, yeah? It's just so what you do is like this. You go to your neighbor and you say, hey, you go to all your friends and you say, listen, I want to teach a class on how to pickle cucumbers, or how to make olives, how to press wine. You bring all your friends over, everyone picks for themselves, and then you do it together as a group. Shemitah brings people together. That's the beautiful thing about it, yeah? Shemitah brings people together. So the other thing is that you can't destroy. Yeah, meaning that ownership, the other part of removing ownership from a person completely, it's like destroying Baal Peor, it's like completely destroying all the idol of ownership, is now the second part is I can't destroy what belongs to me in the way that I want it, which comes into the period, which means what? Chazal said that we can't change the form of the pears, meaning we can't juice something that's not juice, such as cucumber. If I want to juice a cucumber, I can't do that if it contains juice during the Shemitah year. And also Chazal told us that what's eaten raw can't be cooked, and what's cooked can't be eaten raw. For example, potatoes. Potatoes, if somebody likes to eat potatoes raw, you can't do that with potatoes that can take Kiddush Shviz.
Culturally, it's like, I mean, cucumbers, for example, most people eat them raw, but I've used Chinese recipes that cook cucumbers
Who decides what could be in hell?
So you go, Rove.
Rove where?
Rove in amongst the Jewish people.
So cucumbers right now will be something.
Right. Right. If a Kedem Kedusha Shvis and you normally cook cucumbers, you will not be able to do that.
But if carrots are traditionally juiced, I mean, that's like a well-known carrot.
Okay, so again, something that is not normally done in that way. For example, cucumbers, you just examine cucumbers, right? Versus carrots and orange juice and other things.
Does it make a difference if you use the pulp or no? Does it make a difference?
Better to use the pulp, yes.
I'm saying, if I want to use cucumbers, then use a cucumber pulp.
Oh, no, it's not going to help. It's not going to help if you say, I'm going to use the whole thing. I'm talking about, for example, oranges. For example, you bought orange juice here in Eretz Yisrael, right? It's better to buy orange juice that will contain all of the orange versus just like the non-pulp orange, yeah? So you have to, you know, when you juice, you have to also do it in a careful way, because if you remove out the part of the carrot and it's not, you know, recycled inside the juice, then you're destroying in a way that's not... So again, this is part of what we have to be careful for during the Shemitah year, is that when it does contain Kedusha Shvis, then you can't destroy it in the normal way. The other thing is that you can't cause the physical destruction of peros, such as throwing it away and causing it to rot faster. For example, you can't burn it, you can't compost it, and you can't mix it in stuff that's going to give it a bitter taste. Even if an individual likes it, because we don't go after the individual, we go after what most people do in such a case. Because otherwise, we'll never have a halachic standing or anything if we go according to Das Yochi. So you put in, for example, what kind of herb has a very, very bitter taste?
You make a salad like with pomegranate with the bitter greens, or no, is that like...
Yeah, no, it's fine. That's fine.
That's not what you mean about giving it...
No, I don't mean it. I mean giving it a bitter taste to the point it becomes repulsive to eat. Like, you'll never serve it at a Shabbos meal because no one's going to touch it. If someone's going to touch it, he's going to stop eating from his plate, yeah? So that sort of thing. So
the leftovers.
Okay, now, so these are the two things in terms of the Isra Kutsira, reminds us of removing bialis and ownership from things. And how we see, how did we see that la halacha? We said you can only pick 3 meals worth. Each member of the household can only pick 3 meals worth, meaning that if I would eat in 3 meals one pomegranate, that's all I can pick. After that, I can pick another one. And so can your wife or husband and your children, and so on and so forth. Yeah? And the other thing is you can't destroy or cause destruction to things that cause that contain Kedusha Shvis. Now, what happens if you're going to cook with stuff that contains Kedusha Shvis? You have your pomegranate, you put it in a salad, right? And you have some leftover salad. You just eat it. You see, there's some pomegranate there. Now, this is with like Basa V'Cholav, yeah. In terms of a no same time or no same time. That if you're okay, I'll give you a better example. You have herbs in your garden, and some herb like oregano will contain Kedusha Shvis, and you pick it and you put it in your chicken roast, and now your chicken has become infused with the flavor of oregano. So in such a case, now your whole chicken has now turned into something that contains Kedusha Shvis. So your whole roast now has status of Kedusha Shvis, and if there's leftovers, you have to put it in a special receptacle. Call it a receptacle and not necessarily a garbage. A special receptacle with the words on it called Peros Shvis, and you have to put it into that receptacle each day, changing the bag again, because part of destruction is if you have already rotting food in the bottom of your garbage, for example, and you put in some fresher food. Then what's happening is that, as we know, for example, if you want something to ripen faster, bananas, what do? You really want your bananas ready tomorrow, or your mangoes ready tomorrow, and not in 5-6 days from now. Put it in a bag with some apple peels. The ethylenes from the apple, the chemical, the gases start to ripen your fruit a lot faster. Which means basically this, that rotting fruit exudes a gas called ethylene, and it causes the destruction of the new stuff you put in it. So if you do that, that's called, you're causing the speed up or the destruction of Peros Shvis. That's also to do. So what do? Is each day you have on your counter a little receptacle. It's not every day you're going to come in contact with Peros Shvis. So, but when you do, is you always have to have your receptacle there. You put the word Peros Shvis on it, and you have a new bag in there. And from the day's worth of whatever has Kedusha Shvis in it, you put it in there. At the end of the day, you close up that bag, put it on the side for about 2 days, and of course then put a new bag in the receptacle, and then after 2 days you could take that and you could put in the regular garbage.
Can I just make a suggestion? practically,
yeah.
You're going to have a lot of flies in your kitchen when you do this. So the key is to leave it out the window. And you put it outside the window, the receptacle. And if you have a large garbage bin, which you don't take out every day, then once it's tied in the bag, you can put it in the garbage bin, which you'll take out in 2 days. I'm saying, if you leave it around the house, what ends up happening very often during Shemitah is you have a lot of flies around the house. True flies, because you have rotten food in your kitchen. That's why the idea of tying it in a bag is very important. And it's also a good idea, we always put it out the window. Because already after 2 hours,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
you start having flies around the field.
Right. Yeah, so that's why important. Every single day, you have to change the bag and not wait.
After 2 days, you put in the compost? Huh? After 2 days, you go in the compost, right? Or is there a problem with that?
Okay, so when it comes to composting things, stuff that contains to shvis, if your compost existed already, A, number one, you didn't start new compost.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah?
I'm happy with your continuum, but you're not going to make it to Slichos.
What time is it now?
It's 12:15, 12:18.
When's Slichos?
That's 12:30. Welcome to
the show. All right. So, I mean, I don't mind answering more questions. It doesn't look like I'll make it home as legal, so I'll stay here. Yeah. No, so I just want to answer the compost question is because I, for example, some of my gardens, I built compost because I think it's a great thing. I used to be a compost expert and so on and so forth. So, I think it's very important to have. If the stuff is no longer good for you to eat, and animals won't eat it either because it's gotten so rotten and yichs, and then you could put it into existing compost. But that will take a good while before that happens. It could take 5 days, 6 days. We just have the stuff laying around, which I don't know if you want to do that. But you can't put it in like, you know, after a day, at the end of the day, just throw it on the compost bin because your whole compost bin is exuding, you know, is going to cause it to decompose faster. A, B, there might be stuff in there still even after a day that someone desperate enough might, even a person might want to eat, meaning in your garbage after a day. Really, there's a lot of stuff that we throw in the garbage that, you know, tomato sauce. I know, we would eat it. I'm not saying that we would eat it. I'm just saying that it is a bigger concept here, yeah? And more than that, an animal can't have to eat. It has to be nishal, same, achilus, chayot. So, you have to wait a good 5-6 days before that happens. Huh? You cannot give to a non-Jewish person, and it better, yeah, better not to give it to an animal either.
But I have a question for the garden wife. I'm not allowed to, if it's to spit it out. Let's say I taste it,
yes.
And then I'm not allowed to spit it out if I make wine tasting. I don't like
right.
It. So, but the question is, what would I be? Wine
I don't like, and would I be allowed to keep it in the bottle till it becomes vinegar? What I'm doing with it, because I'm not allowed to spill it. Right, right. So technically, yes, you can. You can just leave it until it becomes like vinegar. And then once it becomes like vinegar, which will take a while, I mean, not that's like really wait till it becomes vinegar, then you can dispose of it in a regular way. Yeah, you wanted to ask a question.
Yeah. So in the shuk, are there nechshirim that we know you can take those that go? Or is there
anything? I badat, you know, most of the badat textures, many of the different types of, for example, badats. This week I found out that Sharis Yisrael, for example, is not going to do any business with Otzer Beis Din because they don't want to risk having perus that could take the shvis roaming around in the shuk, because they have all kinds of problems with the kedusha passing on to money, and then you're having money in the shuk that can be used for other purposes. So, but that's a Haredi, generally speaking, will have no problem with Otzer Beis Din. They also have no problem with buying Arab produce. They've already made deals with the PLO. They already made deals with Jordan, which is fine. Halachically, this is a very fine thing. There's no problem buying non-Jewish produce, yeah? And once you deal with it on a political level and a sentimental level, then that's something else. But from a halachic point of view, it's an excellent option to buy non-Jewish produce. But try to stick with the badat textures. You know, in the shuk and in stores, you should ask your to see the teuda. Because generally during Shemitah, the teuda will tell you also. And if the store owner will be willing or savvy enough to do this for his customers, we'll put like a sign with like 6th-year produce, a sign that says, you know, peroshvis, oats are based in, will inform the consumer of what exactly they're buying, so you have the choice, yeah, if they do that. And try to look for things like that. Ask your store owner, tell me, where does this come from? Because they just might say, hey, you know, I don't know, this is my heksher, I got it, but that's heksher, they bring me what I bring, they bring me what they bring me, then, you know, I don't know, I just sell this stuff. You know, that's what a lot of people will tell you. So you have to, after that, you have to look. If it's Badatze the Haredi, then you have to find out exactly what, where they get their, where their sources are produce, yeah? And then decide if that's something that you want to support or not. Yeah.
Double wrapping is an option. I heard once that double wrapping the sheets, the whatever, the feels or whatever, was a viable
option. Is it not? In terms of what?
To throw them out.
And then throwing them directly in the garbage? You know, there's all, there's, yes. It's an option. It's an option. Yes. It's a you know, again, Shemitah, there's a lot, there's like a pecking order of things, you know? So is that on the pecking order?
No,
yes, it is.
When I was,
is it lechatchila? No, but it's on the pecking order.
No, when I was told this, I was told also, like, when you take challah and you double wrap it, it has a similar status as the peels or something like that from Kedusha Shvi'it. So if you can double wrap that, then you can double wrap that.
Yes. Yes?
The limit of three meals, is that only for your own luxury? Like, I make wine.
Anybody.
That's for my neighbors, like, so I can't, I would pick like a big bucket to make wine in the valley.
No.
From anything, I can't take more than 3 days.
No, correct. Unless if you have, for example, if you have a lot of vineyards and you happen to have a lot of vineyards or a lot of fruit trees and you're like harvesting to do, you know, then maybe get oats or based in, you know, and then you can, you know, then you can maybe sell the stuff after. But, you know, if generally for a home garden, you know, you just, it's not shy to really get oats or based in so much.
Huh? Three meals worth of each.
From each thing.
So I have a neighbor who have like 10 grapevines.
Yeah.
I can pick ingredients in each grapevine for them?
No. From grapes. From the category of produce that it is. So grape is a category, even if you have 10 vines and you have a Cabernet, you have a Shiraz, and you have a Muscat.
No, I'm saying, I have one neighbor has grapes, another neighbor has grapes. It doesn't matter how many people, just each time it picks the language for 3 days?
Yes.
Or each owner?
You're saying if all your neighbors have grapevines, can you pick...
I'm not taking more than 3 days in one day, or is it each place I'm not allowed to?
Right.
Yeah,
right. So I'll tell you, it's a good question. 100%, I'm not sure, but 95%, it's only for you to pick three meals worth, no matter where it comes from. Yeah.
Huh?
What's that?
What relevance would it be who the tree belongs to?
It doesn't matter who the tree belongs to. It's hefker.
So it's the opposite.
Huh?
Not her question. She can go to her neighbor and take
food. Where everybody disappears.
Yeah, no, because she can only... The halacha, it falls under her. Shkoya. All right.
And over time, this evening was supposed to be the... And is the launching of the every evening based medrash program, which we're starting small. Then it's going to be from 9 to 9:30. Ariel Ben David this morning, Chavrusas, Chavuras, anyone that has interest, there'll even be coffee. If you want to look at Chavrusas, you can sign up too. Just then please sign up so we know what you want. And everyone is finished here, would you just push Dr. Shabbatsi at that side? You can analyze everything that's here against the wall.
Share it around.
So, it's A, meaning that tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, for
example.
No,
just pushing all these things against the wall.
I plant now, not tomatoes, 7 and 4 shrimp. You can plant things that will contain nutrition by seeds. treat those tomatoes. But you need germination.
Yeah, that's the separate.
So let's say we're 8 days before we grow. And I plant all the cherry tomatoes tomorrow. Or as I did last week, I plant garlic, potatoes, and all kinds of things on the plants. They're only they're gonna have to be
that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, there's a, what happened to the time? That's not for a while. And then, Thank you. Thank you. Shatin Shabateko V'takshiv V'ruhama Ki Yom Vayikha V'shem Adonai V'shalai
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to try and I don't say but I'm going to sleep. Stay here with that. You know, whatever you want. The jammy, Reba, I'm going to sleep. You can stay here with that.
Daddy? Mom, I'm going to you away.
Oh, man.